chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees, chicken in the pots, the martyr walk the Petaloomies, out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20, and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? In the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken, Petaluma never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming here in Sonoma County and beyond. It's Michelle Anna Jordan live in the flesh. I've been gone for a couple of weeks. Got some sort of weird virus that left me unable to come in for a couple of weeks, and I'm still a little bit not fully myself. And I'll just blame it on a virus rather than the state of the world. We have a show tonight that may get kind of thoughtful, philosophical, not sure what sort of alleys we're going to go down, but be prepared, and be prepared to go down the alleys with us and join us if you can. And one of my favorite Sonoma County people in the world in the studio with me, Nan Kohler of Rainbow's End Farm out in Occidental, or sort of between Forestville and Occidental and Sebastopol, right there.
No, it's 1 mile from Occidental.
Okay.
But they don't deliver mail west of east of Bohemian Highway, so our mailing address is Sebastopol.
So that's okay. So that's
it's
what it
really
is.
Occidental.
Yeah,
because I mean, 5 miles from Sebastopol, 1 mile from Occidental.
Well, Grayton says says Sebastopol mail. Freestone says Sebastopol mail. So it's Nan Kohler, and I always think of Nan as if we lived in a matriarchy, if we reversed things and had beliefs that were more earth based, and took care of the earth first, Aunt Nan would be one of the top guardians, and she would teach so many of the rest of us the little nuances that we may not know. And on that note, just let me introduce my magical guest. Nan, thanks for coming back on such short notice.
Thank you so much. I feel like crying. I felt like crying when Michelle asked me to come, because this is one of my favorite radio shows. I always try to make it home by 6 o'clock on Sunday nights.
Well, that's sweet of you.
I'm really honored to be here. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And you are just such an incredible wealth of knowledge. You know, almost every time I see you, you drop some other little nugget in our discussion. And today we were talking in part about, Roundup and the tragedy of Roundup. There's been a lot of stuff in the news about it lately, both locally, but also internationally. And I know that it's a big concern of yours, Nan.
Yeah.
And so let's go there first.
Thank you. Yeah, sure. I told, when Michelle asked me to come, I said, okay, if I can talk about Roundup, because I got triggered on the topic when Laguna Foundation wanted to spray the Laguna with Roundup. And I was, and quite a few of us in Sebastopol tried to prevent this from occurring. And I,
when was that?
Let's see, I got quite a folder of information. I
you have an impressive stack of information there.
It must have been like 15 years ago.
Okay, yeah.
And well, the first time I my neighbor sprayed Roundup, I called the Ukiah Ecology Center, and they sent me the chemical makeup of glyphosate and the breakdown product, and the, all I got to was formaldehyde, and my jaw dropped.
So first of all, we have this compound. Yeah. Roundup is a compound made of several things.
Well, the thing that's it and of itself, the if you're interested, look up Don Huber, H-U-B-E-R. He's the world famous plant pathologist, retired professor from Rutgers, who got really interested in this years ago, because the original patent for it, I think it was originally patented by Bayer, made a claim. He said it caught his attention because they made a chemical claim for it, which isn't really what it does. It was originally patented as a mineral chelator to clean out boiler tanks.
Really?
Yeah. It chelates minerals, especially magnesium, iron, instantly. It locks them up. And you can look this all up on YouTube. It's all over his talk and other people talking. Mm-hmm. And an interview with the guy from Greenpeace that quit and started becoming a lobbyist for Monsanto, and he claiming you can drink it. And they
that you can drink
him.
Roundup?
Yeah. They confront him. The interviewer said, "Here, I have some Roundup here."
And did he drink it?
He says, "I'm not stupid. I'm not going to. Of course, it's safe and you can drink it. But no, I'm not going to drink it."
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Anyway, that it has two functions. It's a mineral chelator, which is why the plants drop dead immediately when they touch it, and it's also an antibiotic. So in the soil and in the area where you spray the Roundup, it disrupts the flora in the soil, mm-hmm. especially the lactobacillus, especially attacks the beneficial bacteria. So the pathogens in soil can survive, but the good ones don't. So it's very disruptive in that way. Mm-hmm. And also, so there's that part. That's the glyphosate molecule. Then they add to it adjuvants, they're called, which are chemicals that make it stick on the plant if it's dusty or not these are called surfactants. They're oils, and I tried to look it up before I came here. I was looking up on the internet, and they gave a list of they also add the adjuvants to dilute it. So you can use it, goes a little further, and one of the guy said it's one of the components is like an antifreeze. But those chemicals are even more toxic than the Roundup itself, especially on juvenile animals, the toads, the frogs, fish, the baby animals. It causes all kinds of birth defects. It's bad in the water. It's really bad to get it in the waterway.
And what sort of half-life does it have? Do we know that?
Well, formaldehyde's forever.
Okay. Oh.
It never breaks down.
Really?
Yeah, it's very stable. And I wish I had, when Michelle asked me to do this, I'm not really prepared. I'm feeling pretty not as clear-minded as I would like to be, because I'm coming from a scientific family, and both my parents are chemists. My grandfather's a chemist. He's one of the inventors of plastic. And my father has over 200 patents and has a chemical company in Germany. I was born in Germany. I have a very intellectual family. And
where in Germany were you born?
In near Darmstadt.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I want to be more precise than I can be, but it's easy to look up.
In a conversation, it's okay not to be precise, because those kinds of technical figures, you know, figures especially, they're hard
to capture the first time that you hear it. And so people can just get the gist of it, and they can look up for those details if they want.
I don't remember the half-life, what it is.
Okay,
but it's a bunch of chemicals
anyway. One of the things that breaks down into, in part, formaldehyde.
Yeah.
And I've, you know, this is definitely going down a different pathway for a moment here. But formaldehyde, actually, never mind. Let's just cancel it. I was thinking something else. I was thinking of what is used to embalm bodies.
Formaldehyde.
Okay, it is formaldehyde.
Yeah.
So I was reading, I think maybe 5 years ago or so, that there is a problem that will increase, which is as coffins.
Oh, no.
As coffins disintegrate, the formaldehyde, the chemicals used in unnecessarily embalming the body, are going to leach into the soil and into the groundwater. And that I think it was 5 or 10 years ago that this was sort of a big problem or a big discussion, and then sort of vanished. And I don't think anything has changed in the funeral or burial industry. And I think about this in part because I live downstream from two big cemeteries in Sebastopol. So, I mean, they
It reminds me of the medicines people take, then urinate and throw into the water. I was thinking that when I was driving here, because they're using recycled water to spray the fields.
And we, and even in non-recycled water, I mean, we have so much estrogen and antidepressants in creek water, river water, that sort of thing. So it's, you know, we're we just continue to poison ourselves.
One of the guys I looked up today, I was trying to look up before I came here really quick on YouTube, was saying one of his theories of why so many people need antidepressants is because the Roundup, because the minerals are chelated out of the food, especially magnesium, things that calm you down.
Wow.
It's all pervasive, and it's found everywhere. It's up in the Arctic. There's no place on Earth that isn't exposed to it.
To Roundup?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think I've also read, haven't I read about it being in breast milk?
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. It's everywhere. And then where's this quote, this article that was in, I sent you a copy that was in the Gazette, Pernicious Pesticides, and the guy said in Sonoma County, just in the parks, just in the county alone, not counting the all the vineyards, 3,800 gallons of glyphosate-based pesticides were sprayed in 2015, and it's doubled this year. It's way doubled. And
it doubled last year, in 2016.
Yeah, and I the thing I wanted to say that got me really fired up, and I wanted to do something. I'm really thrilled in the way that I can talk on the radio about this, because the grape growers are trying to present themselves as sustainable, and I see these signs everywhere on the vineyards that say sustainable, but they're spraying Roundup all along the fence line and under the grapes. I mean, I want to have a big stamp that says not. They don't realize what they're
doing.
It's
easy to get that made.
Yeah.
Sustainable is a word anyone can use. It has no legal meaning, I don't think. Does it?
Well, it has a popular meaning.
It has exactly.
It's a legal, it's not like,
it's not
organic,
like organic,
you can't use.
Exactly.
Controlled. Yeah.
So they can use it.
But
anyone can use it, and
means
it doesn't. It doesn't. No one
it has
can.
No it has no legal consequences.
Exactly.
But it, but still, it's presenting yourself to the public. It's a substitute word for organic in the public parlance, you know.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
There are wineries who don't use it.
But even, I've heard, I understand the wineries, even the wineries that don't use it, because it's so all-pervasive, it's in the organic wines also.
Mm.
There's no escape from the Roundup.
It's
all around. And it really makes me upset, because there's no plant easier to grow than a grape. Grape is the most weedy thing there is. You don't need to weed grapes.
Yeah.
And they do it, theoretically, to control insects and pests that might infect the fruit. But when you have a normal garden, the insects, they live in community. They live in a group, and there's birds around and other animals, and you do not get these out-of-hand infestations that you get in the monoculture.
Right.
It's a whole different.
About 15 years ago, I think it was, when the glassy, remember the glassy wing sharpshooter?
Yeah.
That was a big concern, because it was destroying grapevines. And a number of people a number of wineries started looking into mechanical means, mm-hmm. Natural means. And I know this was when Bynum Winery was mm-hmm. still owned by the Bynums, and actually still under that name. It's a different name now. But they put in several hedgerows. They were very innovative towards the end of, before they sold. Mm-hmm. And they had food forests interspersed with their vineyards. They had olive trees and all kinds of diverse plantings. But they also had very thick and very long hedgerows mm-hmm. with the kind of wasp that fed on the grassy wing sharpshooter nymphs. Mm-hmm. And so they were very, very successful mm-hmm. at being a truly organic winery. Wow. And then they sold, and I don't know what the practices of the new owners are. Initially, when the new owners took over.
Where are they located?
They're off of West Side Road. On West Side Road.
Sure.
Closer to say Waller Bridge mm-hmm. than to downtown Healdsburg. And some of their vineyards way up, you had to drive a ways from mm-hmm. the actual winery up the hill. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what's going on with that, but we don't hear as much talk about hedgerows these days as we did for a while. For a while, it looked like everyone was going to put in a hedgerow, yeah. which everyone should.
Yeah, and the government will fund it. NRC will fund it.
Who will?
The National Organic, what is it called? The sub unit of the Ag Department.
Really?
I want to say NRC, but that's not the right word.
We'll think of it.
But they do provide funding for hedgerows and for interplanting, yeah.
Uh-huh.
If you want to be organic. There's uh-huh. lots of money, actually, for all these practices.
Uh-huh. I hope that continues.
Yeah. Oh, under what's his name?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what we can call him.
I heard today when I was at the store and I was telling people I was coming to talk about this subject, and they said that the funding for the organic program was going to be eliminated, and people aren't even going to be able to get organic. It's not going to be controlled as carefully.
Well, you know, the I never remember his name, and that's okay. The new director of the Environmental Protection Agency mm-hmm. sued the Environmental Protection Agency 19 times.
Yeah,
he want his goal was yeah. is to
eliminate
to get
it, yeah.
to eliminate it mm-hmm. entirely.
I
think there's going to be a lot of pushback.
Yeah.
With
so.
People like you. Yeah. And we need people like you all yeah. over. Let's take a little musical break, and we'll be right back with more talk.
I was there too, and you know what they said, some of it was true. London calling at the top of the dial, and after all this, won't you give me a smile? London calling. I never felt so much alike.
Of course, that is The Clash. London Calling, for obvious reasons. We're going to stay on the subject of Roundup for a bit.
Yeah.
There was something.
I wanted to say something else. This is a little, I was going to say off the wall, but that's not the right word either. But 1988, I had the privilege to go to Bali for 2 months and watch them. We lived in an ashram, a Gandhian ashram, with the woman, the director of the ashram was the wife of the first president of Bali, so she knew everybody, and she was a professor at the University of Denpasar and multilingual. And there were people at the ashram from all over the world. So through her eyes, we got a real fantastic introduction to Bali and the Balinese culture.
Mm-hmm.
And what I wanted to say is that made a really big impression on me. Just like in India, or those of you who've been to India, where people carry bricks they don't use machinery. It's people. Mm-hmm. And in Bali, they don't even allow wheelbarrows. They don't want any labor-saving devices because it puts someone out of a job.
Oh, interesting.
And the Roundup is like the mechanization of agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
When we live here, well, if we were back east, maybe, where you have to mow frequently, but here you only have to mow once. Why drive along with a sprayer when you can drive along with a mower or hire people? There's all these homeless people, and I know they're not in great shape to do work, but they could be. People could be rescued and directed, and we used to, 95%, only 100 years ago, everybody was involved in agriculture.
Yeah. Yeah.
This whole world, new world is, people, we don't realize, I was thinking of that when I was driving today. I'm old enough to remember the days before we had plastic bags, for example,
mm-hmm.
in the 40s, and we'd go to the grocery store with, wrap it up in newspaper or paper, or cloth, whatever you bought, and people went frequently to the store, and there weren't any big supermarkets, there were little stores everywhere, or people came around in wagons with food,
mm-hmm.
and there was no shortage of food. It's like people want to move their products.
Yeah, absolutely. I think about this sort of thing a lot myself, and I think about how there are so many labor-saving devices, mm-hmm. or quote, I should put quotes around
right.
that, both in the industrial world, in the mechanized world, but also at home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people have to buy, electric, what do you call it? Little tiny electric whisks to make foam for their morning espressos. And it's so crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems at the same time concurrent to all of the innovations that we've been able to make to do things for us. It hasn't saved us any time. Everyone
no.
talks about how they have no time for anything.
Right.
So there hasn't really, I always think part of it is, well, everyone works so much to pay for all this stuff we don't need. But it's more than that. I'm not even sure what it is. But again, it's just getting further and further and further away from agriculture, from the earth. And I think it's that disconnect that allows us to allow it to be poisoned.
Yeah. And people feeling disconnected from their environment and their community. And the farm is the place, the heartland, your home and your garden.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and I think mealtime, and I know that probably the majority of Americans don't view things this way, but I think that around the world, a lot of people do,
mm-hmm.
and that is mealtimes are really maybe
bonding
the most
time.
Yeah, it's
bonding time.
The most important
mm-hmm.
time
right.
of our daily lives. Mm-hmm. It's how we connect with each other.
Yeah.
And plus, we have this, and this never gets brought into the discussion about Roundup or anything else, and I think it should. We need to bring the obesity problem into it,
mm-hmm.
because one element that doesn't get added in is that in America, we eat on the go, we eat in our cars, we eat fast, we don't spend an hour or 2 hours around the table twice a day like they do in Europe, for mm-hmm. example. And the brain... When you eat, it takes 20 minutes for your stomach to tell your brain that you're satisfied, that you've had enough. And so when people are eating in their cars and they're eating fast and they're eating alone, they don't have conversation to slow them down.
Mm-hmm.
They gobble. They don't put their forks down.
Mm-hmm.
They eat a bit mindlessly. And I think that is one thing that leads to satisfaction. I mean, to obesity,
mm-hmm.
is that they're eating more than they want, they're eating more than their body needs, and they're not feeling satisfied, and so they eat more. And they never get off that train of putting too much stuff in their bodies before their brain tells them, okay, that's all for now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you combine that with the poor quality of the kinds of foods you buy in supermarkets... a supermarket egg, for example, has, you might eat a 3-egg omelet because it's not really very satisfying anyway.
Right.
Where I've lately, because I get
bread.
Such incredible eggs,
mm-hmm.
I've been making 1-egg omelets for myself for just like one egg, and often not with very much. I don't put much in an omelet. I might put a little cheese. I might put a little bit of mushrooms if I have them, but mostly it's just like a nice egg.
Mm-hmm.
And one egg is like plenty. And I think that those things need to be factored into this whole other thing, the fact that we don't exercise much because we don't have to. So our exercise is artificial, getting on some stupid stationary bicycle. It's not incorporated into our life. It's separate. And
we're not carrying kids and water and chopping wood and making the garden grow.
And, you know, doing laundry with our...
to do.
And it's going to break at some point. What have you explored the county's policies about Roundup?
Not really. I did. I have written Caltrans some letters because I got really upset at them spraying in February, driving in all the green grasses coming in, you're luxuriating in the green, and all of a sudden there's these dead stripes everywhere. I thought it looked terrible. And they have quit doing it, thank God.
Oh, they have?
Yeah.
Okay, because I would notice, I would often notice when I was going to Oliver's on Stony Point Road, and for some reason, I would turn to go on to Occidental to go home, last year. And there would be a lot of, all of us driving and some people walking, lots of people with their windows down, and there would be an employee in the full, you know, spacesuit spraying Roundup in the center dividers that had almost no weeds.
Nothing,
just like a few little sprouts. It's like, honey, first of all, you wouldn't have to put on that suit. And second of all, you could pull
Where's
those weeds
hoe,
in 5 minutes, not even with a hoe, because they're in the coming up in the cracks of the cement. And
somebody in office told him to do it.
Yeah, and plus we're there with our windows rolled down until we see them. And it just... it's so disheartening to see.
Yeah.
And now we have a new controversy locally that I do want to address. I don't want to condemn, but I want to bring this up as an issue, and I think it's an important one. And there was an article, I don't know if we can find it online, unfortunately. I left my MacBook Air at home, but maybe Anthony can look it up for us. There was an article in Sonoma West that the very popular strawberry stands, Lau's strawberry stands, which opened this year, I think, in late March or early April, they used Roundup 15 or 16 times in 2016, and they used a couple of other chemicals. But when asked, but just by a customer, when asked casually by customers, they say, no, we do not spray. And sometimes, apparently, I've talked to some people who have said, no, they told us they're organic, just not certified. And if you use a chemical on a farm, you have to file with the local ag board here. And so a reporter with Sonoma West Times and News, we're going to look out. Anthony got it up. Thank you so much. So you have to go to the Sonoma County Agricultural Commissioner, and they obtained a report. And let's scroll down to where it shows what they were using. Okay, they have 12 acres of strawberries. They used Roundup Power Max and Roundup Weather Max herbicides, along with something called Acromite 50WS on 12 acres of strawberries 17 times between February 2015 and November 2016. Saturn, Lau Saturn, he says that they spot spray, that they don't spray the whole field. He uses the pesticides and herbicides to fight off bugs and weeds. That's a little scary. That's a little scary. I'm hoping now that there's been a story about it, I'm hoping that somebody will be able to really overcome the language barrier and do a good interview and let them speak. I mean, they are a family business. We need strawberry producers.
Everyone loves them.
Yes. Yeah, and we used to have somebody a long time ago, back in the late 80s. There was a guy and his son who lived west Sebastopol, way out, and it was during a drought period. It was like a 4 or 5 year drought. They would have strawberries in February. They would have strawberries from February till November.
I remember that guy was in the over on Burnside somewhere.
Something like that. Yeah, and then they vanished. They vanished. He used to talk about
the thing about strawberries. They're not a permanent crop. You have to keep They like to move around.
Yeah. Well, these guys, I think, they moved.
Yeah.
They moved.
But their fields died off also.
Oh, they did? Yeah. Well, I just talked to Tom Noble of Armstrong Valley Farm, not Armstrong Woods Farm, which I accidentally called it. Armstrong Valley Farm, all his strawberry plants just died.
Yeah.
He had strawberries for about 2 weeks, and they've all died. He will not have any more strawberries this year. Mm-hmm. And
it happened to me 1 year with my raspberries. I used to have 2 acres of raspberries. And one year in 1990, I'll never forget it because I almost fainted. It was so horrible. Just overnight, the Phytophthora, once it's established in the soil, it just goes like fire. And you dig down about 3 inches, and there it is, a sheet of white under the soil.
And what is it?
It's the conch. It's the mold that kills the oaks, Phytophthora.
Oh.
But it's everywhere. It's present in the soil. You can never get away from it. It's not like it's not like the trees got diseased or sick.
It's just always there.
It's always there. And when the climatic conditions, this what happened in 1990, there was late June rains. And I made the mistake of mulching them with wood chips.
Oh. And so it held in the water?
Well, the Phytophthora likes to grow on the oak.
Oh.
On the oak chips.
Oh, there you go.
From the Davy Tree people. Uh-huh. All my farmer friends said, oh, Nan, your plants are going to love the wood chips, your raspberries. And they did the first year or two. But then when they get down under the soil, once the soil builds up on top of it, the raspberries have this ramified woody root system that's very susceptible to mold, especially the Phytophthora, the wood mold. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they like to move. They say, and it's classically the raspberry only can live for 7 years in one place.
I did not know that about raspberries.
Yeah, and I had them. We moved. There were raspberries at the farm when we moved there, and I didn't believe that. Mm-hmm. I thought it was kind of a myth because I had them for a long time, 15 years maybe.
And do they just die off then? Quit producing?
The plant acts like it's water starved because the root system can't overcome. It rots quicker than it can make the new root hairs because of the mold overtaking it. And the conditions have to be just right, you know, just like with the sudden oak death. Mm-hmm. It's not like the trees all of a sudden got diseased. The disease is there all the time.
All the time, right.
And they are stressed from the drought.
Right.
And then the water comes and the trees stress and the trees' root systems aren't growing as fast as the mold is growing. It's like a dance.
Interesting. So in your study of the usage of Roundup, have you found any suggestions, any ways that are effective for people to fight back, to complain? Is it worth a call to the ag commissioner? You said you wrote to Caltrans. Does it help to ask questions of farmers? Do you have recommendations just for the average person?
Paul and I went and talked to the director of the Laguna Foundation and the water people, both. Mm-hmm. And I brought them some books and stuff when I looked up on the internet the Roundup.
And by Paula, you meant Paula Downing.
Yeah, Paula Downing. They claimed that that the Roundup didn't hurt the animals in the water, the aquatic animals at all. But if you look it up on the internet, you'll see it doesn't hurt the adults, but it hurts the young ones, the embryos.
And plus, we have to think about, we haven't even brought bees into this yet.
Oh, my God.
And I'm not going to mention the person who told me this.
Birds.
They don't want to get involved. But there's a strawberry stand on Stony Point Road on the way to Petaluma, that section of Stony Point Road. Yeah. And there was a farm there where a woman was growing a number of things. She was growing rhubarb. She was raising bees, that sort of thing. Somebody went to buy some food from her, some rhubarb, actually. And she started talking and said, you know, these strawberry farmers, they spray at night. And she took this farmer to the fence that bordered the strawberry farms. Property, all the bees were dead. She had supers there. All the bees were dead. Took the farmer to another part of the property far away. The bees were thriving. And we have the colony collapse problem around the world.
Sure.
And, you know, we lose bees, we lose.
Yeah.
We're gone and the earth can heal itself without us around.
Right.
But we don't really want that to happen.
Yeah.
So it's really important.
Yeah.
Ask the question is my best advice.
Well, also talk about philosophically, what is it that's happening to our population of people, what is the mental process that they think they can kill something on such a large scale and it not have any consequences, and that they're not also killing themselves and everything else around them? What is it about our empathy, ability to empathize, or our larger viewpoint of nature? And I mean, it's the Kali Yuga. It's just so destructive.
Sometimes I think it's, and I hate to keep saying this, sometimes I think it's the end result of patriarchy gone too far.
The worship of gold.
The worship, yes, the worship of gold.
I remember my children going, two of my kids went to El Molino, mm-hmm. and I felt like the thing they learned the most there was that, you know, when their career oriented was, if you earn money, it's okay. Whatever you do is okay. And people mm-hmm. take all kinds of jobs and do all kinds of weird, terrible things. Mm-hmm. As long as they're earning a paycheck, they don't give a second thought about
yeah.
it. And like making guns.
Yeah,
make a living making guns yeah. to kill people. Yeah. Come on.
But then also war, and war being so mechanized right. and so quote-unquote efficient
yeah.
and distant. And the fact, and when I say patriarchal,
drone operator,
I'm really talking about biology.
Yeah.
In that men don't give birth, so they're one removed mm-hmm. from the physical empathy. And I'm not saying all men lack it, and I am also not saying anything negative about men when I talk about patriarchy. I just think it's sort of the exclusively male attitude mm-hmm. gone too far. Mm-hmm. And that it needs to, especially with men in power, right. who what they worship is gold and power.
Yeah. Every man has a mother.
Every man has a mother.
And a wife.
Well,
maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Or sisters or friends. Come on, ladies.
Every man is connected.
Yeah.
But a lot of women won't challenge men mm-hmm. either individually or as a group.
Also. Yeah,
because they want the good. They yeah. want the goodies that right. the patriarchy provides. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think is the source of a lot of this, which makes me feel both optimistic mm-hmm. because, oh, let's do something about it. And it's a positive thing that we could do. Mm-hmm. But it also makes me feel really pessimistic because I worry nothing will ever happen to mm-hmm. change it, that things will be destroyed.
Yeah.
So we're going to take one more musical break on that note. And we're going to come back and we're going to talk about dirt.
Oh, I couldn't find that book.
Hey,
Yes, also The Clash, and yes, London, We Will Stand By You, of course. Mm-hmm. Just every day we check the news and it's something
it's
else.
It's because
like
the
that.
Election is coming. They want to scare people to vote for what's her name, May, the Sand, what is her name?
Theresa May.
Theresa May. I was
well, she's going to win anyway. I mean, I just thought she was just because her approval ratings are so high.
Well, that's because of the bombings.
Oh.
They're trying to scare people, make people want to stay. And she keeps talking about her power and how she's going to control everything and investigate everything.
I haven't been paying so much. I've been paying more attention to the mayor of London.
Oh, yeah.
I like him.
Me too.
Yeah, I really like him. Okay, so we're going to talk a little bit about dirt because... I know you and I are on the same page, but you know more. You know way more about this. But one of the things that is really disturbing and has been for a while is all this antibacterial soap and how this...
And in the sponges.
Yeah, and...
Drives me crazy.
The fetish.
The smell of it.
Oh, it's awful. The fetish that, say, even with a child, with a child, you know, if you go see a newborn, or if you go see a young... You know, a friend has a baby, you go see him, everyone has to, like, clean their hands with antibacterial soap and practically keeping kids in a sterile environment, some people, and also trying to create a sterile environment in the home. And it means, number one, we're not getting the good things from the dirt, and we're also not developing the immunities that we should be developing.
Yeah, in the scientific literature, it's well documented. I mean, easily, like a home, children... that grow up with a dog have a much better immune system than in families where there's no animals, no pets.
Does that apply with cats as well?
I don't know, but I just heard the study with dogs. But I imagine it would apply with cats.
You would think.
Also.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And there was a really big study done comparing the children of Russia and Finland. And they're right adjacent, the countries are bordering each other. Mm-hmm. And in Finland, they have a very high rate of asthma and intestinal problems with the children and diabetes.
I didn't know that in
Finland. In Finland, they have all these health, asthma, things like that. Whereas in Russia, there's nothing like that at all. And they did the blood testing. The Russian children all had been exposed to parasites and soil bacteria and dirt in general, and the Finnish children were all never had their immune system challenged, so it doesn't function. Doesn't know how to tell what's you and what's not you. And the babies. We were talking about this earlier. The baby's first food is dirt, is rocks and soil.
And in what way?
You put the baby down. That's what they'll eat.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay,
that's their first food,
When they're crawling
around.
When they're crawling around, absolutely.
And it's very hard. You cannot prevent it unless you're
watching
super.
Them 24 hours a day.
Yeah, vigilant parent. But it's normal. You want them to eat the dirt. It's the soil and the grass is where the lactobacillus live.
You know, when I was little, I loved the taste of muddy water that had been on cement.
Oh, interesting.
That was cool.
Oh.
You know, if it was
minerals.
Warm, I didn't like it. Yeah. But if it was, and I still love that. In fact, my favorite wines are the wines that have that taste of wet cement. I still remember this one time I was drinking gutter water. Wow. A little bit, not a lot.
Yeah.
I probably needed the minerals.
Yeah.
And a neighborhood kid went and told my mother.
Oh, no.
And my mother made me come in the house and she forced me to drink milk of magnesia.
Yeah.
Oh, I got so sick.
Scared,
it's just such a horrible...
Sure.
That stuff is so horrible. Right. So, you want...
Yeah, I grabbed my folder. I have this really great book about dirt and the benefit of dirt. You need the exposure. Well, we were talking about the fecal transplants. Because
this will bend your brain. Okay, let's go there.
Yeah, when I first heard of it, I think, what the heck is that? But they found... in the last few years that people who have colonoscopies done and had their colons evacuated, when they try to reestablish the normal intestinal flora, they can't.
They can't do it.
No one knows. And furthermore, no one knows its complete composition anyway. And 80% of your intestines is bacteria. The bacteria are the ones who absorb the nutrients out of your food. And then we absorb the breakdown products that the bacteria create for us into our body. So when you're eating, you're really feeding your bacteria, not mm-hmm. your body.
When people, you know, there's a big deal these days, certainly in all the news, about probiotics. Yes. And I don't think people connect the fact that it's like, that's the good stuff in your gut.
Yeah.
That is the good stuff.
Right.
That's where your nutrients right. come from.
And there's elements of it that we don't really know and understand, like mm-hmm. the intestinal parasite, quote, parasites, mm-hmm. or the negative creatures that also live in our gut, that when they try to eliminate them, people don't do well. They serve a function. We don't really understand.
Mm-hmm.
They're on the internet. You can Nova has a wonderful special. You can Google it up, where they show the insides of the intestines
mm-hmm.
and talk about all these bacteria in the.
I heard. I mentioned this when I was speaking with you today at the market. I heard a doctor, a university doctor, teaching doctor, a pretty international level, very knowledgeable, talking about colonoscopies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, year 50, they hand you, you know, your prescription to go get one or something. And like every year you're supposed to go get one, which is ridiculous. And he recommended, number one, that people not get them. Yeah. This was a legitimate doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And he also said that he talked about this destruction mm-hmm. of the intestinal environment
yeah.
and said there's also no reason to do it.
Right.
That it's not necessary for a colonoscopy. It's contraindicated, and it's only done for the convenience of the staff administering the test.
Mm-hmm. And you're never going to be normal again.
Yeah, you will never be normal again. Yeah. So I say resist.
Right.
I will not have one. I will never have
one. I heard
one.
A really shocking thing on NPR once. A guy was talking about how he infected himself with hookworm, and he went to the toilet area in villages in Africa, because hookworm, if you don't want too much of it, but if you get some hookworms, what he recommended, 10 or something like that, in your intestines, they well, let's see if I can remember what they do. They communicate with your immune system to not react. So people who have asthma, he was a chronic asthmatic. It cures asthma.
Oh, wow.
And if you Google him, you can get him, he sells his feces, so that, which is infected with hookworm.
Oh, we're getting back to the fecal transplant.
Yeah, so that you can get in your body if you're an asthmatic, and it will cure you. Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
I was That's shocked
amazing.
When I heard that, but it's true.
Now, this is getting kind of grody, perhaps, but there
is... the other end of eating, huh?
There is a lot of information now about the benefits of fecal material.
Yeah.
And there are...
they called fecal transplant. They uh-huh. put it in people's bodies, put a feces from a healthy, normal person uh-huh. into the intestines of people who can't digest anything.
Yeah, but it's used for other things as well.
Yeah.
There's a story in the New Yorker within the last year or so of a man. I mean, they search for people. They test people at MIT.
Mm-hmm.
Some people do that perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And they then provide the feces for both studies and these programs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very interesting article in the New Yorker
mm-hmm.
about this guy. He's got the urge, and he has to take like 2 subway or 3 subway rides to get home to do things properly and then get things off to MIT.
Mm-hmm.
So it's we're so removed from our bodies in so many ways that even talking about this sort of thing makes a lot of people
mm-hmm.
really squeamish.
Yeah.
But we're a whole body.
Yeah.
You know, and our whole bodies are connected to everything else on the planet. We're not separate.
And what doctor looks at people's stool or smells it or floats it in water, looks at the urine, the color? And
very few.
Yeah.
Okay. Just had to do a little business there, a little brain blip. I told you this hour would fly.
I'll say.
And it has flown.
Yeah.
One thing I want to do is tell you, if you do buy strawberries at Lowe's, talk to them.
Yeah.
You know, talk to them. They have not been given a chance to respond yet. And, you know, there's a lot of discussion on Facebook about it. But it would be really good if the people who really support them got into conversations.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it would be great. let's help them get grants to put in hedgerows. You know, the hedgerow there at their farm stands would be fabulous. Mm-hmm. And I know that, is it Feed Inc., Feed Sonoma, when they were helping them for a while. Mm-hmm.
So I tried to. It's not that easy because the modern technique, the fact that you can't replant on the same ground.
Right. You have to rotate crops.
Exactly.
You have to rotate crops. Anyway, I just wanted to say, give them a chance and talk to them.
We love them.
I want to move on to you and your farm.
Yeah.
Because you make your living in part selling at farmers markets.
Right.
And I know you attend Sebastopol, you attend Bohemian.
Who would ever think?
Occidental.
It's grown so much.
So,
since I first started. Well,
really?
Yeah.
How many years ago did you start?
Right in the beginning, pretty much.
Okay.
Well, I knew Hilda at the
Hilda
Santa Rosa Farmers
Hilda
Market.
Hilda Swartz back in the
80s. Yeah, I started in 87.
Okay.
Because we had this bumper crop of raspberries, and I made a lot of raspberry jam, like 10 cases. And then I sat out in the parking lot there and sold them. It was really awkward for me to do that, to expose yourself like that.
Oh, yeah.
It's really... I mean, you get kind of used to it, just put yourself out there on the street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And now you have just a very diverse.
Yeah. And then I got obsessed with how to make a living off the farm without using machines and just doing everything by hand and organically. I read Fukuoku, One Straw Revolution, highly recommended.
One Straw Revolution?
Yeah, by the Japanese farmer. He's now deceased, but he has a big following and there's lots of programs. Fukuoku, his name, Masanobu Fukuoku wrote a book called One Straw Revolution, where he describes permaculture style farming, and that's how my garden is now. It's one area after another. You start with, like Michael Presley said, you start with potatoes or strawberries, and then you plant perennials, and then eventually a fruit forest emerges. You plant fruit trees, and then you just leave them alone. And I just mulch them every year and maybe cut the dead limbs off. Mm-hmm. But they're self-sustaining. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then underneath are all kinds of weeds, and I use I'm part of the Herb Exchange, and we harvest a lot of weeds. The weeds. They all thrive. And this year especially.
And a lot of the weeds have really good properties.
I make a lot with them.
Do you ever do anything with plantain?
Oh, yeah.
Because I think...
It's in my green drink.
Plantain is a miracle.
Herb spread. Yeah, it is.
It's a miracle weed.
It's incredible.
If you have a special... And this is something everyone should know this year, and then we're going to be out of time.
Yeah.
If you have bad allergies this year, and I certainly do, even little lark...
Timothy grass is intense. That's what's making everybody sneeze right now. Yeah.
Well, if you have it, if it affects your eyes, pick some plantain, and you just pound it, add some hot water, mush it around, wrap it in a paper towel, and put it on your eyes. Mm-hmm. It is a miracle drug. Yep. Mm-hmm. It is the best thing I've ever found for eyes, and that's where most of my allergy sensitivities are my eyes.
Me too.
And it's plantain is a miracle. It's the only thing you need. Yeah. And plantain, you can go online and just look up, put plantain plant. Mm-hmm. You don't want to get the banana. But look at plantain. You will recognize it. It's easy to find.
It's everywhere.
It grows wild in Sonoma County.
And also the other one you need to know is the south thistle. Look that up. It's a relative of dandelion. It grows everywhere.
South thistle?
Yeah, SOW. And it's the best remedy for insects. It's like if you get stung by a bee or ants, it neutralizes the toxin immediately.
Oh.
Within 10 minutes, you'll never know you were stung.
Oh, that's good
to know.
You
just chew it up like and put it on.
Uh-huh.
And the other one is the yellow dock, which grows everywhere. Everybody's got dock.
Yellow dock,
the root, though this virus you had, that won't go away, that the antibiotics can't help. You chop it up like you're cutting up carrots into small sections and cook it for 2 or 3 hours on low heat. More mixed up, the better. And then you decant it through a cloth in a jar and keep it on the counter and take like a shot glass full every hour.
Okay.
And the next day you'll be okay.
I will find it. And on that note, we are definitely out of time. And didn't I tell you, Earth Mother... Nan Kohler, thank you so much, and I'm going to have you back more often. Thank you so much for coming. Meet me back here next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming in Sonoma County and beyond. Have a great week. Take a look, 'cause I'll